Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, July 17th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Hill Fire doubles in size despite fire activity described as moderate. Local environmental groups create informational webpage on offshore wind. And Governor Gavin Newsom signs new bills, including one to ease financial burden on Californians recovering from addiction and mental health treatment. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Hill Fire is now mapped at over 3,700 acres, nearly doubling yesterday's total. Containment, however, remains at 0%. New evacuation warnings were issued Wednesday morning for Humboldt County, and the previous orders and warning remain in place. The fire is currently 8 miles south of Willow Creek in the Mosquito Creek and Buck Creek drainages. And despite the dry conditions today, the fire's activity was not as extreme as predicted. That's according to Adrian Rubiaco.
I'm the Fire Public Affairs Officer for the Six Rivers National Forest. And today on the Hill Fire, the U.S. Forest Service and CAL FIRE are now managing this fire in unified command. And we have brought in a local Type 3 incident management team to assist with managing this incident. In addition, we also placed an order for a complex incident management team, and we are expecting that to be filled over the next few days. Fire activity today seemed to moderate, therefore we didn't see a significant increase in acreage. Firefighters on the ground started to work on constructing indirect and direct hand line as it was possible. Because as we know, this fire is burning in very steep, rugged terrain and also in a very remote part of the forest. Therefore, the primary operations that have taken place to suppress this fire are via air resources. We have several aircraft assigned to this incident, and that includes helicopters, air tankers, and air attack. The air resources have been performing retardant drops across the fire since it started, and those operations continue today. And that is in an effort to slow that progression of the fire. In general, the fire is growing more to the north side, and at this time, it's approximately 8 miles south of Willow Creek. Also today, firefighters started to provide structure protection to communities and structures that are threatened, because at this time there are multiple structures threatened.
It's unclear how many residences are threatened, but crews have begun structure protection efforts along Route 1 and within the Friday Ridge communities. Additional ground resources continue to be ordered and arrive on scene. The Hill Fire is now being managed in unified command between the U.S. Forest Service and CAL FIRE. So we asked what it means when federal and state entities collaborate on fire efforts.
So when the U.S. Forest Service and CAL FIRE join in unified command, that's normally when a fire is potentially going to impact state land or private land. Whereas if it remains U.S. Forest Service, then that's typically just burning on federal land. But now that we're in unified command, we will work together to prioritize both agencies' goals and objectives for protection and also suppression strategies. And from there, with the arrival of an incident management team, that provides additional resources and capacity to help support fire suppression activities. So what that looks like is, you know, you might see the beginning of a fire camp set up. Since we're receiving so many additional resources, we need to provide that support logistically to ensure that all the resources are taken care of and also to help streamline operations for those on the ground operational firefighters and resources.
Redwood Acres Fairground in Eureka has been activated as a CAL FIRE Incident Management Base Camp in response to the Hill Fire and will be closed to the public for at least the next 2 weeks. When asked how long the Hellfire is forecast to burn, she said,
"At this time, we're still assessing the potential duration of the incident, but as we have the teams arrive, that will help us improve that assessment, and we should have a timeline shortly. So far, we have seen rapid growth in the fire, and that even though today we saw more of a moderate growth in behavior, the fire conditions are still dry, and there is still that potential during the days for that increased rate of spread and fire activity. And so in the event there are additional evacuations needed, that's where the importance of the Genesis program and signing up for those alerts with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office are critical."
With the Hellfire currently 8 miles south of Willow Creek, moving towards the north, we asked if there is an immediate threat to the town.
So the Forest Service is continually working with our partners at the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office to ensure that we're making those timely decisions, or rather us providing that recommendation to the Sheriff's Office. And one thing we did see today was a slower growth, which was a good sign.
KMUD News posed the same question to Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel. And by text message, he stated, quote, "No, no chance that Willow Creek is in danger of going into an evacuation warning within the next 24 hours, end quote. However, depending on weather, topography, and fuels, fire behavior can change. The fire is currently progressing into a fire scar from the 2022 lightning complex, which should help to slow its progress. But residents should stay aware and sign up for Humboldt Alerts. You can do so at humboldtgov.org. In Trinity County, Sheriff Tim Saxon stated that his sheriff's office is closely monitoring the situation, and at this time is not anticipating warnings or notices based on the current fire activity. But he stated folks should always be aware of their individual circumstances and can voluntarily leave an area if they feel uncomfortable. Trinity residents can sign up for Code Red emergency alerts at trinitycounty.org. Road closures are in place on Friday Ridge Road at Forest Service Route 6N06, 5N01, and 5N04. Highway 299 remains open. The evacuation order for HUM E077-A, which is north of White Oak Creek, Grouse Creek, south of Friday Ridge Road, east of Titlow Hill Road, and west of Mosquito Creek, Madden Creek, remains in effect. Residents who already evacuated from the zone are not permitted to return to their residences. Others who remained in the zone are encouraged to evacuate immediately. Evacuation warnings for Zone HUM E077-B and the new evacuation warning for HUM E076-A are also in effect and were triggered due to the fire's rapid growth. In Humboldt County, the Office of Emergency Services uses Genesis Protect as an evacuation management tool that helps communities and first responders more effectively plan, communicate, and execute evacuations. It's a platform where residents can look up their address using the search bar and use the zone map to find evacuation information for their area. Within Humboldt County, there are over 300 different zones, and during an active emergency, your zone will be highlighted, where you can utilize the interactive map, which is why the Office of Emergency Services is asking all to know their zone. For more, we spoke with the lead OES official in Humboldt.
My name is Ryan Derby. I'm the Emergency Services Program Manager for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office of Emergency Services. Our job in OES is to monitor, respond to, recover from, and mitigate against local and regional emergencies and disasters.
Southern Humboldt saw evacuations last week due to a wildfire on Alder Point Road. And now, new evacuation orders and warnings are in place for rural communities south of Highway 299 near Friday Ridge.
Last week, the big focus was on the Point Fire, which was just northeast of Garberville. For that fire, we actually issued evacuation orders for two zones north of Garberville and a warning for an additional zone north of that. We got really lucky with that one, with how quickly the resources on the fire and loss side were able to come in and evacuate people and get air resources in, and the wind was pretty favorable, pushing it away from the town. Right now, that fire has essentially gone back to normal status. Now we're monitoring what's called the Hill Fire, which is south of Willow Creek, kind of out in the wilderness there. It's grown pretty substantially over the last 24 hours.
The Hill Fire was 50 acres on Monday. Today, it's nearly 4,000.
We are monitoring it really closely and just recommending that anyone specifically in that area, but countywide, registers for Humboldt Alert notifications and knows their evacuation zone on the Genesis Protect website, which is protect.genesis.com.
Pre-established evacuation zones help fire, law, and emergency service agencies prepare for, streamline, and reduce confusion during the evacuation process. It also provides a common reference system for all in the community.
So the zones that we created, there's about 330 of them countywide, and we use those when we issue out our notifications in Humboldt Alert to determine the polygon or the area that's going to go into an evacuation order or warning. And there is a strong possibility that those zones will be split during an emergency, where you'll have, say for this current fire, the E077 is about a 50,000 acre zone. So cutting that into two or three zones to minimize the number of residents placed under warning or order.
Derby explained that during an emergency, a zone might split into various sections, like on the Hill Fire, where zone HUM E077 was split into A and B.
The important piece for residents to remember is that the number for each zone is always going to remain the same, but we'll be adding, an A, a B, or a C if we do end up splitting those zones. So people will know the number, and they'll be able to punch in their address at the protect.genesis website and see where they are in relation to an incident.
We asked how OES works to determine which zones need emergency notices.
Kind of a three-phase cycle when we issue out warnings or orders. So the fire service makes a recommendation based on how quickly the fire is moving, the terrain features, the types of fuel, and where populations at risk are. And then that call typically comes in to me directly or to our dispatch center. And then we'll have a conversation with the sheriff on, where to institute those warnings or orders, because the authority to evacuate lies with the county sheriff. So fire recommends, the sheriff makes the order, and then OES issues the notification.
Today, it was announced that an incident management team has joined the effort to suppress the fire, which Derby says will make it easier for agencies to collaborate.
U.S. Forest Service bringing in a local incident management team to start working on this. Though there are resources currently fighting the fire, this will bring additional resources, a little bit more structure to the response. And what it does for us is gives us a direct point of contact to get routine updates and establish some of those decision points for when an evacuation order or warning may go into place. So we've been in communication with the Trinity County Office of Emergency Services and Sheriff's Office as well. So pretty much everyone's monitoring this really, really closely. And just with the terrain and how difficult it is out there, it's pretty much going to be an air show to get the fire knocked out in that region. We're going to keep a close eye on it over the next 24 hours, be in really close contact with Forest Service. Certainly if there's public safety risks associated with the fire, we'll be getting that word out.
And in closing, he implores all to register for alerts and be prepared as the fire season progresses.
Self-register for Humboldt Alert at humboldtgov.org/emergency, or they can call the Office of Emergency Services at 707 268-2500, and one of our staff will help register that person. You can also kind of tune into our website at humboldtgov.org/emergency, and that's where we post routine updates for incidents that we're responding to. And certainly the protect.genesis.com is a good way to get an interactive map, and it'll have links to register for alerts and go to our information page as well.
Again, the Hill Fire is located in northeast Humboldt near its border with Trinity County, burning within the Six Rivers National Forest, approximately 8 miles south of Willow Creek, in the Mosquito Creek and Buck Creek drainages. The fire is located in rugged and steep terrain that is challenging for ground crews to access. 50 lightning strikes were recorded within the Six Rivers National Forest on Monday evening, causing the Hill Fire and other smaller incidents. Residents are urged to stay alert and report any new starts to 911. You can find this information and more on the KMUD News social media pages or at kmud.org. A coalition of Humboldt-based environmental groups have created a new website that aims to answer questions about offshore wind. In order for the public to be better informed and make a decision about whether this project is right for Humboldt. For more, we spoke with Matt Simmons of EPIC, one of the authors of the new site.
I am the climate attorney at the Environmental Protection Information Center, or better known as EPIC. As I work on policy issues and projects, I am thinking about climate change and trying to make sure that EPIC as an organization is thinking about climate change in our work.
Simmons says he works on projects that have a climate benefit and tries to prevent greenwashed or false solutions. Recently, he has been focused on an offshore wind energy project that is slated for Humboldt's coast. But unlike the land-based Terrigen wind project that was opposed by EPIC in 2019, Simmons says he supports this new project.
Every project is different, and every project is going to require site-specific, you know, considerations of all of the environmental and social impacts. For me personally, and for EPIC, there's a lot about offshore wind that I think is more attractive than onshore wind. There's fewer interactions with species, there's fewer interactions with people, and so there's a potential to generate electricity, renewable electricity that doesn't burn fossil fuels, doesn't add to the climate crisis, with fewer impacts than a lot of the other ways that we can generate that electricity. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't any impacts, and that doesn't mean that we don't need to be extremely cautious and careful when thinking about these projects. But I think it does mean that we need to take a serious hard look at them and really consider both the costs of doing them and also the costs of not doing them.
The new website, northcoastoffshorewind.org, was created in partnership with EPIC, Humboldt Waterkeeper, and the Redwood Region Climate and Community Resilience Hub, as an online tool and resource to help the community answer questions about the project, like what are the potential environmental impacts of the proposed Humboldt offshore wind project.
I was getting a lot of questions about the offshore wind project. You know, it's pretty much the largest single development to ever come to Humboldt County, and so a lot of people are interested in it. But what I was finding was that people were having trouble finding accurate information about the project. You know, if you just Google offshore wind, get a whole bunch of different sources, some of them more accurate than others. And particularly for folks in Humboldt who wanted to know about this specific project, there wasn't any sort of centralized place to go to find out about what's going on, what's being proposed, where are we, what stage are we in this process. And so the idea came about to have a website where you could answer those questions. And so we've organized it as sort of an FAQ, frequently asked questions page, where we took real questions that we had heard from folks, or that we all just sat around the table one day and just sort of asked each other, like, what are some big questions about this project that we'd like to know more about? And then we spent a lot of time, you know, reading and researching and gathering information so that we could, as accurately as possible, answer those questions with sources, with references, so that people know that we're not just making up this information, that we're getting it from somewhere else, somewhere responsible. And then we can put all that in one place so that it's a convenient tool for folks to use if you're just, for example, just learning about these projects today, need to get informed.
EPIC supports this particular project, but recognizes that there are significant local concerns about its impact on sacred tribal spaces, marine species, and the ecology of the North Coast. The scale of the wind turbines and the use of new technology are untested in such deep waters and raise potential risks. Additionally, adding new port infrastructure would significantly change Humboldt Bay, transforming it into a more active port. While Simmons supports the project, he hopes the public will arrive at their own conclusion, using fact-based information. But sorting fact from fiction can be difficult, as fossil fuel companies and other vested interests engage in misinformation campaigns to slow action on the climate crisis. A recent Brown University study finds persuasive disinformation about offshore wind. Groups like Save Right Whales and the American Coalition for Ocean Protection are actually associated with fossil fuel interests, working with climate denial think tanks and community groups to obstruct offshore wind projects, according to the report.
So for folks who aren't familiar, the East Coast is a bit ahead of us on offshore wind. You know, they just installed their first commercial scale project this year. But in the lead up to that project, there was a ton of misinformation going around. So you said Save the Whales. I think that's probably the most well-known example of this. A couple of years ago, there were a really tragic string of whale strandings and deaths on the East Coast. People started spreading as fact that this was being caused by the offshore wind turbines. Now, never mind that this happened before the wind turbines were installed and also happened in areas where there wasn't any offshore wind work being done, none of the survey work or anything. People share a meme on Facebook that has a wind turbine next to a dead whale, and they just assume that it's true and just sort of run with it. And that really damaged these projects and caused a lot of people, you know, well-meaning people who care about whales and marine life, to be really concerned. And I think what's most concerning of it all is that when you traced a lot of this back to its source, it was actually coming from groups that were funded by fossil fuel companies. And so then why are fossil fuel companies trying to scare you about offshore wind? I mean, I think it's obvious to me that they see this as competition. You know, as people transfer from, you know, gas-powered cars to electric cars, and they start heating their homes with electricity instead of gas, the fossil fuel companies are losing out. And so they see these new, greener, renewable energy resources as a real threat to their business model. And they're using, you know, our conscientiousness and our environmentalism against these projects. And I think worst of all, they're distracting us from dealing with the real problems. Like, there really were a string of whale deaths. Whale scientists are pretty sure that it was caused by climate change, right? And so not only are they spreading disinformation, but they're spreading disinformation against the technologies that could be part of the solution to fighting the problem that's causing the whale deaths themselves. It's pretty insidious.
In an effort to provide fact-based answers in one convenient space, EPIC helped to create NorthCoastOffshoreWind.org, which focuses on five key areas: climate, environment, community, engineering, and development. We asked Simmons what key things he learned and what he thinks the public should know.
I think the biggest thing that I want to say is that there's a lot of information we don't know yet, but that's a good thing. So I'll give you an example. You know, how many wind turbines will there be? Well, we don't know yet because the companies are going to spend the next 5 years like studying the site, studying all the available potential wind turbines, researching how it's all going to fit together. And through the environmental review process, through the National Environmental Policy Act and the EIS and all these documents, they're going to come together with the regulators, a working model of what could fit there responsibly. right? And so when someone asks you how many wind turbines will there be, and you say, I don't know, I think the answer can be really frustrating, but I think it comes from a good place, which is the companies and the regulators and the environmental community are doing the work right now of figuring out how to make this work in a responsible way. And so it takes time, and it's not going to be a quick, easy answer, but it's developing, I guess, is my point. And so when you go to the website, there will be questions that lead you to an answer that's like, we're not sure yet. You know, here's maybe an example of what they did in Europe. Here's an example of what they did on the East Coast, so that you can get a sense of what's out there. But this isn't set in stone. And over the, you know, many years long process of permitting that's about to happen, we will learn more information. And as we learn that more new information, this website will update. And so you'll be able to check in and see if more is known.
When asked if there were financial incentives associated with the creation of this webpage, Simmons said,
no.
EPIC plans to stay engaged in the development process and will share information on the new webpage. As for what comes next in this process,
I think that the project that people in Humboldt are going to experience first is the heavy lift marine terminal. It's this proposal to build a new terminal in Humboldt Bay that will assemble these offshore wind turbines before they are shipped out to shore. And so I think that that's going to be the project that sort of moves first and that people in Humboldt are going to experience first if it comes to be. And so that's something I'm watching extremely closely and that I think people are going to start hearing more about in the coming months as it sort of moves forward through the process.
EPIC and others have been advocating for a green terminal and saw success earlier this year when the Harbor Commission adopted a resolution to commit to the climate-friendly option. The board directed staff to collaborate with the terminal developer and operator to develop a green terminal strategy and to present that roadmap no later than March 2025. KMA News will share updates from the recent Harbor Commission meeting early next week. In the meantime, you can visit northcoastoffshorewind.org to learn more about the proposed offshore wind project slated for the North Coast, with construction beginning as soon as 2026. KMA News will continue to share updates.
Democratic State Senator Dr. Aisha Wahab wrote Senate Bill 1320. She said the bill would require health plan companies to establish a process to reimburse providers for mental health and substance use disorder treatment services.
SB 1320 basically requires health plans and insurers to establish a process to reimburse providers for mental health and substance use disorder treatment services that are integrated with primary care. Integrated behavioral health care is where a team of medical and behavioral health clinicians work together to address basically a patient's concerns in a primary care setting unless the patient requests or requires specialty services. So it's at the very start, literally everyone goes to primary care.
Wahab said that currently there are not enough resources for those seeking treatment for mental health and substance use. She said the bill would create funding for more treatment services, and the availability of more services would in turn drive down costs for patients.
A lot of people have been complaining, and I've heard, you know, I sat on a fentanyl working group for almost a year with the Senate, and primarily some of the things that we heard were that there were not enough substance use disorder treatment services and organizations that provide that service pretty much anywhere in California, right? And being able to add this with those that actually provide primary care will lead to less out-of-pocket costs to the patient.
Wahab said that moving forward, she wants to see addiction and mental health treatment become a standard part of day-to-day health care.
Primarily, I just want to see a seamless combination of primary care and behavioral health services that create a comprehensive and holistic care for the patient, you know, and by promoting the collaboration between specialty behavioral health providers and primary care, it creates an integrated model that overall enhances health outcomes, right? And I think that's incredibly important because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you're getting the best care wherever you're at.
I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters. Reporting from KMUD in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.